This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and online at kexp.org. My guests this morning are Ivy Sager Rosenthal, Campaign Director for the Washington Toxics Coalition, Nancy Hirsch, Policy Director for the Northwest Energy Coalition, and Bill Robinson, State Government Relations Director for the Nature Conservancy. Ivy, Nancy, and Bill are here today to tell us how priorities for environmental legislation fared in the 2012 Washington State legislative session. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Diane.
Would you begin by giving a brief overview of the three priorities that the environmental community chose for the 2012 Washington State legislative session, and also remind us why they are important?
I'll just give you a brief overview so everybody has a sense of context. And that is the Environmental Priorities Coalition. It's a network of the 25 largest environmental organizations here in Washington. And we convene each year and identify our priorities for each upcoming legislative session. And this year, we pick three priorities. And usually it's three or four priorities every year. We all coalesce around those. Of course, we work on other issues as well. But those are the three that we all kind of coalesce and work together on. And this year, the three priorities were pollution-free prosperity. And we'll talk a bit more about that later, what that means. And that fulfill our clean energy initiative. And the third one was our toxic-free act for children. And we will take turns kind of talking about each one of those. But those are the three, and we've all worked together. And I think we can probably report to you that it was actually a successful legislative session for us.
Before you give an overview of how the priorities fared, would you say a few words about the political climate during the session?
When we picked these priorities, we did this earlier in the year, a couple months before the legislative session started. And at that time, we were picking up information, intelligence, not at the national level, but the state level. And at the national level, you've probably all heard that a large number of the industrial groups talked about reducing some of our environmental protections in the sake of helping our economy. They were creating this false choice of environmental regulations and a healthy environment and business development don't go well together. We think that's a false choice. We think they go together very well. So we selected at least pollution-free prosperity as a mechanism to respond to that, to make sure that Washington doesn't abandon some of its core environmental protections we have for the citizens in the state for the forsake of improving economic development. That's a false choice. As it turned out, the citizens also thought that was a false choice and very active and were supporting our current environmental structure we have in the state.
Before we go into detail, would you give an overview of how the priorities fared overall?
This is Nancy, and I would say that we worked very well with the citizens of Washington to protect the environment this year. The priorities came through with some great success. I mean, the protection of maintaining our existing bedrock foundational laws was all upheld, and the Clean Energy Initiative remains intact and moving forward with its commitments and obligations. And there was a lot of groundwork laid to reduce pollution. And I think that that was a big success in a time when legislators were focused on the budget and trying to roll back regulations, and that didn't happen.
Yeah, and I would just add, I think Nancy's absolutely right in that we were able to maintain core environmental protections. I think what didn't happen, and is the case with the Toxic Free Kids Act, which we'll talk about in a minute, is that we didn't see proactive new policies put in place, things that would actually improve our health and environment in the state. I think that's where the bar was rather low.
Now let's talk about the individual priorities in more detail. Ivy, would you give an overview of the challenges faced in trying to pass the Toxic Free Kids Bill?
Sure. The Toxic Free Kids Act was a bill that would have banned two cancer-causing flame retardants. We refer to them as toxic TRIS flame retardants that are found in children's foam products. And this was an important bill because we know these flame retardants escape from the foam in our homes, contaminate house dust, and then people, especially kids, are exposed through either ingesting house dust or breathing that house dust. And they have been declared a carcinogen by the Consumer Product Safety Commission. The state of California just most recently put these chemicals on their list of cancer-causing chemicals. And we did research earlier this year that found quite high levels of these chemicals in children's products. So we know they're a problem, and this was an important bill to solve a piece of that problem of exposure of kids. The bill did not pass, unfortunately. It did manage to pass the House of Representatives on a vote of 60 to 34. So we were really excited about that, but unfortunately it did not make it past the Senate and did not get a meaningful vote in the Senate. And it's too bad because now kids are going to be laying and sitting on these cancer-causing chemicals for at least another year.
Why do you think the bill didn't pass in the Senate?
We unfortunately face a very well-funded and organized opposition. There is a lot of companies, a lot of businesses who really want to preserve their profits at the expense of our health. The biggest, most ferocious opposition comes from the makers of the chemicals, obviously. The American Chemistry Council is always one of our biggest opponents in these types of bills. But with the makers of toxic flame retardants, they actually go a step further and don't play fair. In fact, they have funded a very voracious group called Citizens for Fire Safety. And that Citizens for Fire Safety sounds like a great group and a pleasant group that you'd want. Of course you want fire safety, but it's actually a front group funded big time by these makers, and they don't disclose that they're funded by the makers of toxic flame retardants, so there clearly is a conflict of interest there. And they rarely testify in public. They testified once in one hearing throughout the entire legislative session this year, and instead prefer to do their work behind closed doors. So there was Citizens for Fire Safety. Also, the Toy Industry of America was another big opposition that we faced, Washington Retail Association. And they have members including Target and Walmart, the Grocery Manufacturers Association, which include Kroger stores like Fred Meyer, the Personal Care Products Council, so the folks who make shampoos like Johnson & Johnson or Procter & Gamble. And of course, the Association of Washington Business has always been opposed to these types of bills. And, you know, it's not just a toxic flame retardant bill that they've been opposed to. For years, we've been facing this kind of opposition on any kind of regulation or law that would protect kids or families from these toxic chemicals. And, you know, I think it's true that the Senate has become increasingly difficult to get a bill, a proactive bill, through if the business community is not on board. And so because the business community has been opposed to these kinds of bills, it's just very difficult to get a meaningful vote in the Senate.
How do you plan to follow up? Where do you go from here?
Well, I think we're still assessing and figuring out our next steps, but we're fortunate here in Washington that we have a very good agency in the Department of Ecology on these issues, and Governor Gregoire, who has been a great champion as well. And there are ways that we may seek to get these toxic flame retardants listed on our state's chemicals of concern list. And these would be, if they were listed on that list, then at least we would be getting information on these chemicals from the manufacturer. So that's a start. But we are continuing to take a look and see. And as of right now, we have intention to come back next year. But of course, that can change.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Ivy Sager-Rosenthal, Campaign Director for the Washington Toxics Coalition, Nancy Hirsch, Policy Director for the Northwest Energy Coalition, and Bill Robinson, State Government Relations Director for the Nature Conservancy. Our topic is how environmental legislation fared in the 2012 Washington State Legislative Session. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Now let's speak about the Fulfill Our Clean Energy Initiative, and this will be from Nancy. Overall, what is your evaluation of how the 2012 session affected the implementation of I-937, Washington State's Clean Energy Initiative?
The session had some bright spots and a small setback on the two bills that passed. As we had talked about before the session, we expected a number of bills to try and change some significant elements of the standard for renewable energy and for energy efficiency. And in fact, there were, I would say, at one point about 15 bills that would have all changed various elements or obligations within I-937 and its commitment to develop clean energy resources for Washington. But in fact, only two passed, and one we were very supportive of and we feel will really help with implementation. And that bill allows the public utilities to get a decision from the state regulators prior to developing or acquiring a new renewable energy resource or an energy efficiency project, to make sure that it complies with Initiative 937, the Clean Energy Initiative. And that's something that the private utilities, the investor-owned utilities, already have that ability through the Utilities and Transportation Commission to kind of get a nod ahead of time that a project complies with the law. But the public utilities did not have that ability. And so a number of projects were put on hold. A number of utilities were hesitant to make investments in new kind of innovative technologies because they weren't sure if they complied with the law. And now they have that ability to go through a state process and get that determination ahead of time. So we were very happy with that passing. The piece that was a bit of a setback revolves around biomass. And there were a number of bills last year to try and include more biomass resources in the renewable energy requirement of the law. And right now, the law already allows new biomass projects to be eligible as a new renewable resource. But there was an interest in expanding that. So the law that passed does two things. First, it expands the definition of what is an eligible renewable resource by including more biomass. And that includes some things like yard waste and food waste. So some of the compost interests in Washington were interested in having their resource available as an eligible biomass. So now they are included. It includes pulping liquors, which are a byproduct of the papermaking process. And it includes clean woody construction debris. So those are things that were added to the biomass definition for what is considered a new resource. The second component of the law that passed revolves around old resources, biomass projects that were built in the 80s or before. Those currently are excluded from being eligible renewable resources because the goal of the law was to stimulate new investment. And these were old facilities that were already amortized and would not create any new investment in energy resources. However, we got together with the forest products industry and other stakeholders to try and work out a compromise. And we feel that the compromise significantly narrows the inclusion of old biomass resources from what was originally proposed by some legislators and by the industry, so that while this is ultimately a reduction in new renewable energy resources by maybe 10%, it is not as bad as it could have been. And there's also support for the local communities that have these biomass facilities, these older biomass facilities. And so that's the positive outcome of this negotiation.
All right, let's move on now to the pollution-free prosperity priority. What were the most significant rollbacks attempted in the 2012 Washington State legislative session?
We'll get to that in a minute, but I think kind of set a little bit of context in that when the 2012 legislative session began, it was all about the budget. You know, they had a special session just a month before in December, and their state was faced with a $2 billion budget shortfall. And that's a significant amount. You know, it's a total budget. It was only $30 billion. So $2 billion is a huge impact. And so we know going into session that there would be serious budget reductions. We wanted to make sure that those budget reductions didn't disproportionately hit on our environmental programs, not only in terms of reducing the budgets, they simply couldn't be implemented, but also changes to the law, some policy changes that would reduce basic core environmental programs. And so we really had pollution-free prosperity, essentially just that title was, we can continue to have a prosperous state into the future without increasing pollution. That was just that false choice. So given that huge issue of going to the legislature with kind of a negative sense of cutting the budget, cutting back on programs, that's why we kind of coalesced around this idea of defending our current programs. And we were right. When the session started, there were probably in the neighborhood of 75 pieces of legislation, individual bills that would roll back our core environmental programs. Everything from the Growth Management Act to our basic water laws to the biggest pollution source into our Puget Sound, polluted stormwater, rolling back the requirements for stormwater protection, low-impact development guidelines to reduce stormwater, just a broad range of issues that came up. And so given that sheer number of bills, It was a Herculean effort on the part of all organizations to work together. And I think that really is kind of the beauty of a coalition working. We can put our resources together. And in doing so, we got a tremendous amount of public support. There was probably more calls in the legislature from citizens around the state about protecting some of our core protections, not only for health, but for the future of our children, that really did resound very strong with the legislature. We had a group of core legislative supporters that were adamant that these not be reduced. In fact, they all signed a letter to the leadership of both the House and Senate saying that they would not tolerate rollbacks to our basic protections in order to get a balanced budget. So given that kind of framework, it was a huge challenge from the beginning. And at the end, surprisingly, we're very successful. You know, it was one small little change, but I think we've got to neutral on that. But other than that, I would just really credit the citizens of the state and those core legislators for really backing us up and supporting this issue.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guests are Ivy Sager-Rosenthal, Campaign Director for the Washington Toxics Coalition, Nancy Hirsch, Policy Director for the Northwest Energy Coalition, and Bill Robinson, State Government Relations Director for the Nature Conservancy. Our topic is how environmental legislation fared in the 2012 Washington State Legislative Session. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. Would you comment generally on how the session affected our ability to regulate stormwater, which has been an ongoing issue?
One of the attempts, both through legislation and through the budget, were to delay stormwater implementation. Now, keep in mind, we already agreed a year ago, delayed 1 year. And we thought that was the end of the issue. We thought the cities and counties had agreed that that was the end of that issue. Yet they came back and said, you know, given the huge budget problems with local governments, we need to cut costs, so let's do that at the expense of our clean water. And they wanted to delay those implementation another year. Well, by doing that, the impact was you delay the rules for a year, but the implementation would be delayed many more years after that. So we were able to get to the point of there was the rulemaking would be delayed, but the implementation would not be delayed. And a little slight subtlety there. But the positive side of it was we now have in statute directing the Department of Ecology to begin the rulemaking process, which they didn't have in the past. So we gave a little bit, but I think in the end we got to a point where it was neutral for our standpoint.
How did the environmental priorities and other environmental concerns fare in the budget that was passed during the 2012 Washington State Legislative Session?
Well, when I mentioned that the legislature had two special sessions and a regular session to deal with the budget. And the first installment on the budget reductions were the special session in December of 2011. And during that December budget process, the natural resource agencies were reduced, probably larger than the other state agencies. And the thinking was that we gave it the office in the first special session, that in the regular session and the second supplemental session, that we wouldn't have additional cuts. And when we first saw the first proposals in the budget during the regular session, there were additional cuts. And that's where we really cried foul. We tried to tell legislators, you made the cuts and we agreed to the cuts back in December, with the idea was that we gave it the office then and not again. And they yet came back for more reductions. We reminded them of that. And we talked about some specific programs we thought were inappropriate. They did restore those. So in the end, the legislature treated natural resource programs fairly along with the other programs in the state.
I would add, you know, two other things to what Bill said on the energy side. One is, like the other natural resource agencies, the Department of Commerce Energy Policy Group took some reductions in December. And then there was, again, a proposal to further reduce the Energy Policy Office. In fact, the first proposal eliminated it entirely. And this is the group within the state government that's really responsible for driving our whole energy policy for the state of Washington. And they were proposing to eliminate the division within the Department of Commerce and move it with no additional funding or really any staff into the governor's office. So we felt this was a significant attack on the energy future of the state. And citizens kind of rose up and agreed with us and said, you know, that's not appropriate. And they restored that division and its funding, and it remained to take the across-the-board cuts that kind of everybody took, but nothing deeper than that. And the real exciting news is the capital budget, which set aside tens of millions of dollars for energy efficiency investments. And this was a huge victory. A lot of folks around the state worked on this. And It has really two elements for funding. One is what we call MUSH, which is municipal, universities, schools, hospitals. So funding for local governments and institutions to make energy efficiency investments. So that's very exciting to continue that funding that the legislature has previously seen as an important investment for reducing bills of the state and reducing emissions. And then the other piece is set aside for some funding for local projects to replace some of the ERA funding that came from the federal stimulus. And there has been some great organizations that have been working in the last 2 or 3 years to do weatherization and energy efficiency investments in local communities. And they've had tremendous success. And so the state is providing some additional funding to help continue some of that work to do energy efficiency in local communities. Very exciting.
Yeah, we had hoped to end this discussion with a very positive note. And I think we really can say that the capital budget was a very positive thing for the natural resources. They called it the jobs bill. Representative Dungey and Derek Kilmer from the Senate proposed a billion-dollar package. And they called it the jobs bill to help our state get back on its feet, particularly in terms of the construction industry. They feel they could create about 18,000 jobs in the construction industry with this proposal. And there were almost $38 million worth of projects to improve the stormwater around the state, a huge benefit to us. $10 million for the Puget Sound Corps, for volunteers, for people, again, working to clean up our Puget Sound and our waterways around the Puget Sound. There was in the neighborhood of $10 to $12 million of restoring some of the culverts in the county roads and the state forest roads that are blockages to keep salmon from going up into the natural habitat. So there were a number of good and significant projects that would improve and restore some of our habitat around the Puget Sound, all part of that jobs bill. So in addition to, you know, building more schools, energy efficiency and weatherization, there was actually some good restoration and forest health measures in there that really came out to be kind of the real positive note and the real thing we really point to is the success in this session. And I would attribute to those two legislators for bringing this forward.
Just briefly, is there any additional environmental legislation of note you would like to mention?
The one thing that I would note that, again, did not pass that was of concern was there's a raging debate in the state, in Washington and Oregon, around the West Coast about exporting coal from the Rocky Mountain states across the West Coast states into new port terminals that would then offload that coal and send it to the Pacific Rim. And that business opportunity is kind of inconsistent with the state's commitment to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and by exporting coal to be burned in other parts of the world. And there were a couple bills in the legislature to facilitate and support those exports and to reduce the state's ability to look carefully at the permits that might be needed to build those export facilities. And I'm happy to say that those bills did not pass and that those export facilities will have to go through the normal process of scrutiny at the local level and the state level and the federal level, actually. They'll need some federal permits as well. So that was a good thing.
And I would probably mention one other bill. It's relatively minor at this current date in terms of policy, but it's going to have huge implications for the future. And that was Senator Ranker's bill, 6263, that created a marine spatial planning. Right now, our outer coast, there are a number of users of our ocean waters. And they're getting along reasonably well now. But in the future, as we have more uses of our marine waters, conflicts are going to begin to arise. So this sets up a process for all the users, everything from fisheries to transportation to energy development and transportation, to begin to identify what their needs are, where those needs are, and then developing some kind of maps in terms of where's the best location of putting those. So here's an attempt for Washington to begin planning for its future of our marine waters and really begins to plan ahead, get ahead of the problem before it becomes a huge war on the allocation of that resource. So relatively minor issue now, but it have huge implications for the future. And Senator Ranker bringing that forward was really very helpful in this process.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, I would say just the public involvement of supporting our environmental programs was really key to our success this legislature. A number of members, the citizens around the state, called their legislators, and with a very simple message, don't sacrifice our environment for balancing the budget. And that, I think, was the turning point.
Yeah, I would add, I think what's always been true and no more true than this session is that there is really high public support for strong protections for our environment and for our health. And we did a poll early in session and all of our priorities received strong support. The Toxic Free Kids Act had an 84% approval rating from the public. And so we know that these are issues that people care about, they understand, and are important. And Bill's absolutely right. The more people who are raising their voice and letting their legislators and their neighbors know about these issues and that it's important to take a stance, the better off we are. I also think that health has become an integral part of the environmental conversation. And you see not just the Environmental Priorities Coalition, who are traditionally the core environmental groups, but our coalitions among all of these campaigns included health professionals, firefighters, small businesses. So we really do have a larger tent, I think, than just the environmental community and those groups that you tend to think of as the environmental group.
Right. And I think on energy, that's equally as true. And one of the things that was really clear this session was the messengers and the benefits of the clean energy economy for the state of Washington. And the renewable energy companies and the energy efficiency companies were in Olympia. They were talking to legislators about the billions of dollars they're investing in Washington state for clean energy development, and that a rollback of any kind to Initiative 937, the Clean Energy Initiative, would set back their commitments and their investments. And they see Washington as a future for clean energy development, and they want to continue to do business here. And I think the legislators heard that and see that as an opportunity for the state to move forward.
Well, thanks to you all for being here.
Thank you.
You have just been listening to Ivy Sager Rosenthal, Campaign Director for the Washington Toxics Coalition, Nancy Hirsch, Policy Director for the Northwest Energy Coalition, and Bill Robinson, State Government Relations Director for the Nature Conservancy, evaluate environmental legislation in the 2012 Washington State Legislative Session. For more information, check on the web at www.environmentalpriorities.org. Again, that's environmentalpriorities.org. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on 90.3 FM and kexp.org.